I'm here today with a friend of mine that I've known for a couple of years through our bowling league, which is a common theme. A lot of the people that I do speak with in this series, I know from bowling, because that's how I know most people here in LA, aside from band people. I've known Arlene for, like I said, a few years, and I knew her when she had a bar previously to the one that she has now. And the one now is located in downtown Los Angeles. It's somewhat new. It's called The Mermaid. And it's a fun place to go, even if you're not a drinker like myself. So, Arlene, why don't you introduce yourself, talk to us a little bit about your bar and what it's like now owning an establishment in the age of the pandemic.
Sure. My name is Arlene Roldan. Thank you, Andy, for having me here to discuss how the COVID virus is affecting our business. The Mermaid has been open now for a year and a half. We would be celebrating our two-year anniversary in September. And we're located in downtown Little Tokyo. Our bar concept is, you know, swinging the pendulum a little bit back to lounges, a place for you just to hang out and have a great cocktail at an affordable price. We chose downtown and Little Tokyo because I am a downtown Los Angeles native as well. And so I thought it'd be a great, for me personally, to actually own a business in an area that I grew up in. And it was great to represent the 213 again, woo-woo, and I really appreciated that. And, you know, we, as any new business, you know, at first it's been great. And we were finally going down that, you know, having that traction that we really needed, where business was great, sales were great. We were finally creating some regulars, and then the COVID pandemic occurred.
So it's kind of like the momentum was at full speed ahead, and then you just hit a brick wall.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as everybody knows, you know, March 14th, I believe, was the night. It was a Sunday night where we were instructed to close by midnight, that all bars and restaurants would have to be closed. We closed that day, but we definitely celebrated because, again, the Mermaid is a great place to celebrate. And so we did celebrate until midnight. And then on St. Patrick's Day, we decided to do a virtual happy hour. I'd like to thank Rachel Potts for contacting us to do a virtual happy hour for St. Patrick's Day. She is the brand rep for Slane Whiskey. And since that day, we have been doing virtual happy hours every single day. And something that we did immediately is we tried to adjust to the fact that we were going to be closed and, you know, still try to maintain that brand of, you know, having, you know, as much entertainment as possible and stay relevant. And so we, that was our first thing that we did. We wanted to make sure that we were, you know, on Instagram Live, that we were telling people, you know, bringing guests to our virtual happy hour and just really trying to reconnect with the community and stay connected with the community. The Mermaid is very big on community. On a monthly basis, we would do a fundraiser for local nonprofits. And so definitely community is very important to us.
So we're getting a little ahead of the story, okay, to me at least. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to backtrack a little bit. We had a bowling tournament the Saturday before you closed. So the day before we were all involved, many of us were from our bowling league, were involved in a bowling tournament. That was almost canceled. Mm-hmm. It was almost canceled because people didn't necessarily feel comfortable enough to attend, but instead of canceling it, it proceeded and it was great. I think everyone who attended had a great time.
Yes.
But our bowling league on Sunday was canceled. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, many of us or a few of us were at your bar for, we didn't really know what was going to happen the next day. So we all went to the bar and it was awesome. It was a great time. I saw people, you saw people we hadn't really seen in a while. It was great to not be involved in bowling so you could actually kind of spend time with with friends and that sort of thing. But going into that, what were you thinking up until this time? Like, say, Thursday, Friday, you know, watching the news and speaking with your other business associates, your business partners about what might happen.
Yeah, that is definitely something that we all struggled with, because as a business owner, your immediate response is to save your business. Like, you know, save it. You think about how it'll impact your business. But yet there were still a lot of concern about what the public might view us as. And we definitely didn't want to appear as being insensitive, but also we wanted to take that opportunity to, you know, have our last nights and fulfill that personal desire to actually do something good for the community again. And I think it's something that for the restaurant bar industry, we're so ingrained in being hospitable. I mean, that's what we do. Like, hospitality is what drives us. And so the day of, we, my business partner, Katie Kildow, and myself, my husband and her husband, we all had a conversation for at least 45 minutes going back and forth to make the decision of what we wanted to do. And ultimately, when I look back, you know, I know that it was based on that immediate reaction, fear, not really necessarily knowing what was going to happen the next day. Myself and everyone else, you know, we weren't really prepared or well informed to know what was going to happen afterwards.
And I think that when the decision was made by the governor and the mayor, no one knew what to expect. Mm-hmm. I think most people probably thought it was a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, a couple of weeks, it's not so bad. Mm-hmm. Now we're into the third month.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have had a lot of sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. What about it? Like, is this accurate?
Sure. So after, definitely once the governor mandated that we would have to stay home for 2 weeks, I can't remember what the mandation was called at that time, I definitely cried. Because it was one of those situations where at that point, the reality really hit me. And I have tried to be very optimistic, and I thought we'd reopen within 2 months, but definitely we already started to plan to be closed until the end of June. But also knowing as well, you know, we are grateful that we have the skill set to actually run a business with a limited amount of staff. There are a lot of businesses out there that solely run on employees. And so we are definitely thankful that I could go in there and with a cook, and also, you know, my business partner has assisted me, but I'm, you know, mainly a one woman show, that I have the skill set to actually run it on a day-to-day basis.
When you developed these skills throughout your lifetime, what was it that you had experienced or you had seen that you said that I want to do this? This is what I want to do, because you didn't start off bar, right?
Mm-hmm,
you started off in a different,
totally
sort
different
of food
career
establishment, right? Or a different career.
Actually, I started off in a different career. I have a master's degree in public administration. And so I worked for approximately 10 years in public administration. So I definitely have two lives now. And when I had my career, I was in my early 30s. And, you know, it was, you know, once you enter your career in your 30s, you're making enough money. I would go out a lot. I would host a lot of parties. I, you know, owned a house. And so I definitely was, you know, intrigued by entertaining people. I really enjoyed it. And so my husband and I decided to parlay that into owning a bar, because we were at bars all the time too. And it was during the mid-2000s where there was definitely a renaissance, maybe the later tail end, but there was definitely a renaissance in bars. So by 2003, I don't think, like, you know, bars in downtown, like, you know, the Golden Gopher, Bar 107, I don't think they were open quite yet. So there was definitely a renaissance and we wanted to be part of that renaissance. So, you know, my skill set is definitely twofold, where I am a project manager, so I can manage, I can have that ability to sit down and manage things that are short term and long term. And I can also stay and remain calm when, you know, things just hit the fan. And so it has helped, minus the time that I cried, because, you know, we have to sometimes let that emotional anxiety, you know, let it expel from your body. Expel, I think is that right, the word, but just like release from your body. So yeah, that's how my skill set was.
So before you had the Mermaid, you had a different bar out here in the Valley.
Yep. It was called Bar One. It was a beer and wine bar. And we were also somewhat of a venue. We had a lot of bands perform. We did, you know, things from burlesque, weekly burlesque events, to fun karaoke theme nights. And we owned it from 2005 to 2015. So the 10-year mark was definitely the mark that we use it as a milestone, like we all do in our lives. And we sold it because I wanted to own a different bar. I wanted to parlay it into a place that I was hoping would grow quickly, which the Mermaid actually started to do, which was really awesome to see in a short term. But definitely COVID once again shut kind of that dream down.
What's your favorite memory of Bar One? If you had to pick one, maybe two, the kickball team, or, you know, having a certain performer there, or just some kind of chaotic event?
You know, I honestly cannot answer that question, because every day was so unique with customers different, you know, even to the end of 10 years, we still had people walking in because, you know, neighborhoods change. We were located in North Hollywood, which I have a theory about North Hollywood, where we would get a lot of transplants. So, you know, from summer to the next summer, we would be introduced to so many amazing people, and then they would leave, and then we would get reintroduced to new people. And our theory was that when people moved out to North Hollywood, they thought they were in north of Hollywood and realized quickly that they weren't necessarily in the area that they wanted to be. So definitely there was a lot of, you know, transplants. And I think every week, every month, every day was really a unique day. I always had such a great time with all the regulars. We had so many regulars that we definitely created a family. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, I'm just going to say this, and I may be corrected by the league director of our of our league, but I would definitely have to say that at one time, from 25 to 50% of the people who bowl were because they knew me in some capacity or knew Bar One. So it definitely was a place that everyone kind of first congregated to, met. And definitely we have a lot of stories, but I don't really have like one that really, you know, sticks out at the top of my mind. Yeah. I mean, every celebration or every holiday really felt like I was hanging out with my family.
So the new bar, the Mermaid, or the next bar, mm-hmm. the Mermaid, had a different concept altogether, mm-hmm. had liquor license, mm-hmm. and the faces of the bar were all female. So what was the decision to have that as opposed to what you had at Bar One?
I think it kind of just, you know, it was definitely happenstance. It formed that way naturally, which was great. It was organic. I had sold Bar One, and God, these, I have such long stories. I sold Bar One, and it just so happened that when I was in escrow, I finally got the letter from the ABC that I could upgrade my beer and wine license to full liquor. And so, unfortunately, I could not stop escrow. The sale had to occur. I ripped up that letter because I was so upset. It just felt, you know, like, you know, life was laughing at me again, and closed the doors. And I actually did not throw away that letter. I ripped it up, but I ripped it up in a way I could put it back together. And I still had that itch, you know. I thought that career, that, you know, chapter was over, but I still had an itch. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll open up a place with investors, you know, let's see what happens. And so I decided, with this letter in hand, to post on Facebook, and I'm not very big on social media or like to put my personal life out there. I asked if there was anybody out there who would want to, you know, partner with me. And then, you know, Katie and I, we make this joke that we met online, but it's really true. We met through a series of, you know, friends of friends on Facebook, and we connected. And immediately we took that plunge, which most people who own restaurants and bars, they just run for it. They just go for it. You know, it's, you can't, some people do, like, kind of, you know, think things out. But, you know, between her and I, her skill set and mine, we just thought it would be a great pairing. And we started to look around, found a bar, and, you know, we started to create a team of, you know, just so happened it was female. I mean, in the back of our mind, definitely it was something that we wanted to do, you know, work with, you know, females to champion, you know, our gender, because definitely in this field, restaurant and bar field, it's very male dominant. And through that, we connected with, you know, our publicist. We also connected with other bar leaders, I'm going to call them, in the field, or experts in the field. And it definitely became something that we, you know, formulated, but also it was luck as well.
And when you decided upon the bar and the concept and everything it had gone through, what was the anticipation like on the first day when you turn the key and welcome the, not including the soft opening, but the official opening?
It's always exciting and scary, because we were great at opening up, you know, quickly. It took us like a 2-month turnaround, which is amazing because we still have to pay for rent and all that good stuff. But, you know, you're the competition downtown, the, you know, it's no longer like back in the day when you used Facebook to do any advertisements. You actually knew who you were connecting with. And just so much has changed. You know, the restaurant and bar industry is still, and, you know, after the 2005 housing collapse and stock market being bailed out, it was, you know, one of those industries that retail and restaurant, it's the largest growing industry in America. It is definitely something that I found amazing too. Sorry, I'm a little political this time around with the relief that our government really doesn't understand that. It's amazing. So as far as, you know, the restaurant and the restaurant industry goes, there's just so much competition. So we were excited because what we saw is what we wanted. Our marketing, you know, strategy was solid, from our branding to when you walked into the bar. Definitely still nervous because we were different. We were kind of going back to, like I said, that loungy feel. And I think a lot of people in downtown are used to a different experience than what we were giving them. But we definitely wholeheartedly believed that it was a concept that downtown needed. And, you know, I think we were right, and we were right specifically with the industry itself. We have a lot of industry folks who support us, who love us, because we, you know, give them many things that, you know, other bars do, but we are also very friendly. Like, everyone who walks in is important to us.
And I think that I go to a lot of bars, but I don't drink. So it's kind of funny that I'm in a lot of bars, but I am. And I'm not in some kind of program. That's the other part of that. But it's okay that if you are, great. But I think that your bar is just a fun place. Like, you can't really go in there and be down on it. Like, if you're having not the best day, it's like kind of a interesting sort of bright, fun spot without being necessarily really bright.
Yeah.
And over the top, crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have people dancing on the bar, mixing drinks, or doing a lot of theatrical things. Not at all, really. But it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And I the concept is great. When you explained it to me in the very beginning, I was very, you know, I was trying to imagine it. And I didn't understand it until I saw it. And I'm like, oh, this is really neat. And it's not a tiki bar. Uh-huh. It's a tropical bar.
Yes.
Correct?
We are a tropical bar. A lot of our drinks, we do use rum. During the quarantine, I would have to say that we feature more tropical drinks than we have before. And we also have a tropical, I'm saying tropical, but Tiki Thursday. So it's a virtual happy hour that myself and I ask guests that are prominent tiki bar, either enthusiasts, bartenders, and we are definitely embracing the tiki culture a little bit more because, again, it's how do we as a mermaid evolve from what we were before? And what do we do during this time? And plus that you've mentioned, you know, we are fun and we try to always stay entertaining. So the tiki cocktails definitely is like our next, like, okay, we've been fun. When you come into our bar, how can we be fun and deliver this idea to people at home?
Now, initially, the bar was closed. And I don't know what you were going through to consider opening in a limited capacity, offering delivery and pickup. But I know that it came up in a discussion we had briefly. And then you had decided you were going to do it because, I don't know why, maybe because there was really nothing else going on. And to keep some sort of something in people's minds. Yeah. To do it, but what has been the challenges you faced with doing this? And I'm sure there's many, but yeah. What are some of the ones that stand out?
I think for us, I think, you know, location is everything. We are in a neighborhood that, yes, there are, you know, the housing is growing, but I don't think the population is there, especially when you are now competing with so many other restaurants that are doing the same thing. The decision to open and stay open was one, financially. Again, you know, I am able to be there. I don't have to pay myself. So, you know, I want to make sure that we stay relevant, and also we can hopefully transition as quickly as possible. There are a lot of restaurants that are still not open, or they just decided to open on Friday. And to me, that kind of blows my mind. You know, like, what was it about the information that was, you know, being that they were understanding that they waited to this time frame? Because right now it really doesn't change how COVID is affecting our health. It still remains the same. But I think I answered your question. Sorry if I kind of went off tangent. Well,
no, it's fine. The challenges that I know that you faced were, how do I get this food that was never really a to-go food or to-go drinks, yeah, all of a sudden to be to-go,
yeah,
ready?
Yes.
And then also, you don't have a delivery person, so then you have to use a delivery service.
Yeah. So those are really key elements. One, we were never a delivery service. And two, you know, a subset to that is what do people expect to pay, you know, the consumer? Because now my expenses are also going up with not as much volume, because now I have to pay for specific packaging. And then on top of that, I have to pay for, you know, Grubhub. They're not a nonprofit. They're going to make money as well. So then, you know, that is like one challenge. Just expenses aren't remaining the same. They're actually going up. And then not having a delivery, you know, person to assist us. And again, just it really is the location. I mean, those are the challenges. And without the environment, you know, we're a different place. You know, this is totally, this is not, you know, if I said before, this was not our business model. You know, we are now having to figure out things quicker than we have before. It really felt the first day that we reopened, which was, I think, the first week of April. It really felt like I was opening up a whole new business again. Yeah.
And I think that people don't understand that. They see places that are open offering delivery and pickup like it's like a normal thing. Yeah, sure. Pickup. Mm-hmm. Okay. And delivery. Okay. Somewhat, but not 100%. You know, I don't know if you've gone out to get food anywhere, but when you walk into these establishments, it's somber.
Yeah.
People are just, they're not beaten down. They're not broken, but they're not what they may have been prior to this, where there was, you're going into a place and everything's empty. There's two people there instead of a full staff and a full room.
Yeah. I definitely, so I try my best to support restaurants. I do order for delivery probably 3 times a week. And I try my best to support restaurants. But yes, when I walk into places, I totally get that feel as well. People are probably feeling a little overworked, and there's still no like end in sight. You know, you don't, every day, you just don't know what's going to happen, you know, or what the government is going to share with us, or what new procedures, protocols, mandates, you know, they're going to advise. And honestly, at this point too, I think a lot of small businesses are probably not very hopeful right now. It's, you know, first week, I know of a lot of bars and restaurants that knew that they could not survive because restaurants and bars work on a very thin margin. I mean, they probably work on a month to month profit basis. And so when you're forced to close, a lot of restaurants just decided that's it. That was the end of their income and they had to close.
So I never really put much thought into kegs expire, like the beer inside the kegs expire. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about that. And that's been brought up on the radio quite a bit that these products have an expiration date, because most of the times you would not have expired product mm-hmm. because you're selling it. Mm-hmm. But you can walk in any liquor store and see the price of a single bottle or two bottles, whatever it is. And you're probably with a giant wall of product to mm-hmm. sell. Mm-hmm. There's a huge investment just to have this on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And then it's not being sold.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely have a lot of assets in-house. And you're right. At some point, these assets, not the liquor, but, you know, other assets will go bad. And also just, we're planning correctly, but even just serving on this delivery pickup idea, I mean, we're not like selling at the volume we were open. So then there is also a lot of waste going into this too. It's just a constant cycle of, again, our expenses are actually increasing. And, you know, people have suggested, well, you can you can't adjust your expenses. And it's like, no, like there's like a minimal expense that we're always going to have to pay. And it's, you know, owning anything or paying rent anywhere in Los Angeles is, it's a lot of money.
What adjustments have you made beyond what you've discussed? You have limited staff. Mm-hmm. When you're in there, it's one other person and the person cooking. Mm-hmm. And then you just have the door open and hope for the best.
Yeah. So we have adjusted our hours because we have one person who's in the kitchen. We have to maintain, you know, hours. We have to maintain breaks. I unfortunately haven't learned how to cook. So that's one of the adjustments that I kind of see in my future is learning how to cook our dishes because, again, even with the, you know, future of us restaurants being part of stage three to reopen, it's still not fully reopening. So that's like another adjustment that we're going to have to, again, look at our business model or create a new business model to see what's going to be sustainable. And then, again, still be faced with, you know, not enough revenue, but expenses are the same, laws are the same, breaks are the same, you know, so we really, really have a lot of challenges that we're going to have to face in the near future.
And I'm sure that you tried to navigate the procedure to get any sort of loan, mm-hmm. because the way it was spoken about in the news was, oh, yeah, there'll be a fund and we'll have it distributed to everyone and businesses can get relief and so on and so forth. But you hear more and more that these smaller businesses got nothing. And businesses that were perceived to be small businesses, okay, so there's one Subway over here as an example. Mm-hmm. But they're part of a huge, giant company that the whole company got the money.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Subway, but just the whole company got the money. And then the little guy, the little girl, mm-hmm. got left out.
Yeah, so that was the second time I cried, and I cried probably longer than expected. It was... We are one of the fortunate businesses that received funding. And I think it definitely has to go back to, again, you know, our, you know, one of my skill sets in working with government, it's just being prepared, you know, looking out, making sure that we are first in line, that we, you know, put our application in immediately. I would also like to put in a plug for Mariko, who is the small business consultant for the Little Tokyo area. Little Tokyo has a community council that is, they are so supportive. It's amazing that they send us daily updates on what programs are there for the small businesses. And they also have created just, I mean, the neighborhood itself is really, really a community. They're really tight. So it's great that we're part of that community as well. But we were lucky to receive funding. And while I was filling out the application, that was the first thing that I saw when the requirement was 500 employees or less is the first requirement. And I thought to myself, dude, if I had 500 employees, that means I'm making ... Like, this is insane. So it once again speaks to, in my opinion, that our government, one, is still just all about special interests. And I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans. And if that's not the reason, then they're so out of touch with what really is happening. And they're sitting in their, you know, glass tower. You know, they... Yeah, so I don't want to get too political, but...
No, it's fine, yeah. Because that's part of it. It's all has to do with it. It's okay. But speak a little bit about the program that you are involved with that you told me about that helps service industry workers?
So we are actually financing that ourselves, the Mermaid is. We have been able to secure some private funding to assist us. But, you know, once again, the Mermaid is really, really active in our community. And the program is, we call it the Industry Dinner and Cocktail Program, where we offer up to 30 people a day, Thursday through Saturday, a free meal. And right now we are targeting industry workers, but we probably will start expanding it to others so that they have the opportunity, because there's so many other industries that are not unemployed. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, because, you know, I love, you know, based on Bar One and also the Mermaid, you know, we are very supportive of artists, musicians. And so I think that's probably going to be our next targeted demographic, is to offer it to musicians and artists, because they're not working either.
What has the response been so far? It's a relatively new program. Mm-hmm. So yeah. What's the response been?
We launched it last week. So this Thursday would be our second week. And it has been great. We're at probably 75% capacity of what we want to offer. But I think as we talk to, again, you know, being part of the hospitality, I have to talk to everybody who comes in. After we, you know, I talk to everybody and let them remind them, please let all your friends know, you know, we're doing this until the end of the month. I hope that it grows. And as it grows, one of our goals will be, how do we secure more funding? And also, it could be as easy as just selling our, like, cocktails. Again, you know, we have this program called Cocktails for a Cause, and now this will be our new cause, is to fund ourselves so that we can provide meals for unemployed folks.
What do you miss most about bar ownership before COVID-19 became a thing?
Yeah, because both myself and Katie are behind the bar, we are bartending. We are working alongside with all of our bartenders. I first and foremost miss our bartenders. I miss, you know, our bar family is what we call it. I miss their excitement coming in, their energy, and just how that energy just affects the entire bar and affects everybody. And everybody is having a great time, and, you know, they feel good, and we just continue to make them feel good too. So I really miss that vibiness, I guess, the connection that we have with our customers. And again, the bartenders who create the entire, like, little sweet chill nugget that we provide.
What do you look forward to? Say you get a notice on your email from the group in Little Tokyo that says, on this day, don't know the day, but on this day, you're able to welcome people back into the bar, have some of your staff return or all of your staff return. What's that first day? Like, what are you looking forward to on that first day?
So I'm going to add some more hypotheticals here. So that means that we are COVID-free, or we're just able to open. This is like COVID-free. Full capacity, what are you going to do?
Well, yeah, or let's say COVID is taking a break or something. Just something where the governor says, and the mayor says, because you got one that's not listening to the other all that much. But yeah. When they both say that you can turn that key and have people back in the bar, regardless of whether or not they have to wear a face mask or not, mm-hmm. that's not really part of this.
Okay.
But what are you looking forward to that first day?
I am looking forward to partying with everyone who's going to walk in. you know, again, that's kind of bar life. I mean, it's ingrained for you to, one, have a good time with people, and to make sure people are having a good time, to be a great host. So I am looking forward to that one. I'm gonna be a little Debbie Downer, but I believe when we open, even if it's at the half capacity, we will probably be busy because people are going to want that initial, you know, let's go out, let's have a good time. And then there will be the next phase. So I'm looking forward to some normalcy for a little bit. But as we know, things are going to drastically change. So that would be phase, I don't know what phase that is, but there's so many tiers to this with all the unknowns. And we at the Mermaid know that we have a long road ahead of us.
What do you and your husband miss most about life before the pandemic? And it has nothing to do with the bar now. This is just your own personal life. Do you miss going to the store and seeing a full selection of toilet paper and paper towels and be like, I don't need that right now?
Well, so I'm somewhat unique where the domestic life, I don't interface with much because I just don't. Sounds really weird, I know. But to answer your question, we definitely miss family. And we miss going out to restaurants. We miss being, you know, eating great, unique cuisines of Los Angeles, different, you know, concepts for styles, and also just miss having people prepare food for us and bring it to us and having that full experience, that dining experience. That's definitely something we miss. And I do miss going to see bands live. Definitely.
What is your favorite place that you look forward to going to once this is over, aside from your own?
Yes. Yes. The Mermaid is top number one. Oh, well, this is, I'm sure everybody has said this too, but I miss bowling. I miss going to our weekly league, which was every Sunday at 6. And I miss my bowling mates as well as other people in the league. But, you know, your bowling mates are like, you know, we've been bowling together for 3+ years. God, probably longer. We're in a serious relationship now. So miss bowling. And last, I miss going to yoga. I'm a yogi. I miss it. So, you know, you need that extra, you know, relief in life. But personally, we have adjusted where we do bike ride a lot, you know, maybe 10 miles 3 times a week. So we're out trying to get this, you know, get some sun in, remove ourselves from our home, from our new work life. I definitely work equally the same or more. Because there are just so many elements to reopening after you've been closed for 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know that you've cleaned, and you said that you cleaned, it was the cleanest it's ever been, but
yes.
You can only do that so many times.
Yeah. No, it really, my main focus is now that I see other people and I do have some, you know, I do feel a little weird about it sometimes, but now if you notice like restaurants and bars, like their tone is changing where they're trying to make what they're doing exciting, you know, like, hey, it's mimosa, you know, Sunday. And, you know, I'm going to have to adjust my tone as well, because if everyone else is doing it, that means we're kind of, you know, behind in some sense of just, you know, marketing, social media. And so every week it really is researching what other people are doing. Obviously, you know, we have our own ideas and concepts, but it's always good to see if it's in line with everybody else or if it's different. You know, we're definitely different. We always try to think outside the box.
Okay. Well, your Chinese food is here.
Yes.
So I'm going to let you go with one final thought about your hopes for the rest of 2020, which up until now has kind of sucked.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I hope that we can survive. That sounds very bleak, but it's, I have to be honest with myself. We do have this, you know, grant/loan, but once again, the government, you know, isn't really explaining very well how it works or when, if we need to pay it back, what we need to do. Some of the restrictions are not doable right now since we got the money in the second phase and they haven't made any modifications. But my hope is that we survive and that we are able to adapt quickly to what is going to be asked of us. And as of now, it's you know, taking it day by day, but also having that understanding that we have to be adaptable very quickly.
You have to survive. You have to go on the Fork Report.
Oh, that's right. I was invited. We were invited, and we need to definitely make some tropical punches, which he loved the tropical punches. So yeah. I love it. In the meantime, everybody here can find us at the on Instagram, Facebook, and our website is all the Mermaid LA, so Los Angeles. And we have a lot of virtual programming. So virtual happy hour, Wednesday through Friday. Saturdays, we have some fun like comedy shows, artists performing. And more importantly, we are open. We have the best chicken wings in town. Promise you guys would love it. And we also added a hamburger. So our food is very delicious. Everything is house-made, homemade, and we take pride in our food. So please try the Mermaid, and the food is delicious. You need to try it. Quarantine! Quarantine!